What's up, guys? It's the Lady Gang podcast, and we're very excited because Jenna Fischer, you know her, Pam from The Office, is on our show, and she's talking about her brand new book, An Actor's Life. She's also talking about the time she auditioned with Larry David and hugged him when he was trying to get her to leave the room.
It's amazing.
I've never been so jealous.
It's one of the funniest episodes and funniest guests we've ever had on, so tune in to the Lady Gang this Tuesday, exclusively at PodcastOne.com or the new Podcast One app, and don't forget to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts so we can feel famous.
Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's a man who is not found to be strangely entertaining, according to most iTunes reviews, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. Today, I'm very excited. We're going to catch up with Sophie Clark here, Thanksgiving weekend, as we're getting into everything through 9 episodes of Survivor, Heroes versus Killers versus Hustlers. Of course, we had our know-it-alls. We talked with Tyson Apostle on Friday. All those podcasts are up for you guys to listen to. We still have the exit interview to do as well. That is going to be coming up on Monday, so be on the lookout for my interview with Cole. Plus, I'm going to take on Liana Boris in the This Week in Survivor History quiz. If you've been one of the people that's been waiting for our shirts to come back on sale, I don't think we've had the shirts on sale at any point in 2017. The shirts, RHAP shirts, hoodies, tanks, they're all back. RobHasAWebsite.com/shirts for that. And of course, all of the links to our podcast offers, Omaha Steaks, Wonderbly, even CanvasPeople.com, all available at RobHasAWebsite.com/gifts. And of course, speaking of CanvasPeople.com, I want to thank them for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. CanvasPeople.com, they are printing gorgeous canvas photos from the photos that you have on your phone. All you have to do is take a photo, upload it at CanvasPeople.com, and what they're going to do for the listeners of Rob's podcast, they're going to get you an 11x14 canvas photo, normally $69.99. They're going to get that to you for special $0 pricing. You just pay the shipping. It comes out to about less than $20 altogether. Take your favorite photos, great for gifts for families, anybody that's hard to find gift. All you got to do, find a picture of you or them, send it to them. Everybody's going to love it. CanvasPeople.com, over a million satisfied customers so far. So easy to do. Nicole and I love the one we have of the boys. Get this special offer. Go to CanvasPeople.com, upload your photo, select the 11x14 size, enter promo code RHAP in the promo code box in the cart to get that special $0 pricing. That's at CanvasPeople.com, promo code RHAP, in 1 week till our live show in Austin, Texas. For ticket information, go to robhaswebsite.com/AustinKIA. Everybody, I'm very excited to bring our guest in today. She is one of the most requested guests that I get to have back here on the podcast. And we have not sat down and had a chat that was not in the know-it-alls format about Survivor since March 2016, when we talked about episode number 5 and reviewed the Anna Kate boot of Survivor Go Wrong. Please welcome back Sophie Clark, the winner of Survivor South Pacific.
Yay. God, I want to go back and listen to that. I really hope I was not too positive or... Man, yeah. I wonder what I said about
I think you said she is a robbed G.Oddis. She should play and run for office, I think you said.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And I endorse anything she says and does from here on out. Yes.
She speaks for all of us, I think you said. All right, Sophie, very excited to catch up here on Thanksgiving weekend. I know you have a very busy travel schedule. You are off from work at this point in time. So nice to be able to check in with you about Survivor.
Yeah, this is, I'm super excited. I actually can't believe that it's been a year and a half because this summer, my boyfriend and I took the summer off and we went hiking. We were hiking like almost every day for a couple months straight. And we not only did we watch Big Brother religiously, but we listened to your podcast religiously, which is, I have to admit, something I've never done. And we listened to maybe, I don't know how many Big Brother podcasts you put out a week, but we listened to every single one. We would just walk silently in the woods listening to the the post show recap and the live feed recap and the whole thing.
It brought you and your boyfriend closer together. Was he have any exposure to this beforehand?
I have kind of forced him into the world of Survivor and Big Brother, but I think he has dived in a lot deeper than I was expecting.
Now, do you think that maybe he just doesn't really like it? He's just into you and wants you to think that he's into it?
I think that's possible. I think he also maybe just didn't quite understand that listening to 6 hours of Rob is like not a normal Survivor viewer behavior. He was like, oh, you were on this podcast. This is the podcast for Survivor. Like, I should do this.
Yeah.
And then he's every so often he'll say to me, oh, Rob said last night. And I'm like, I finally had to say to him, like, you know, I don't listen to that every day. I mean, Rob, I would listen to it if I had more time. But like,
I think it's so weird, but you never listened to it before in terms of Big Brother.
Yeah, well, I think we had a lot of time together, and, you know.
I filled the awkward silence. Is that what you're saying?
Did. Yeah. You filled a lot of awkward silences. Also, okay. I know we have to get into Survivor, but we never got to talk about the Big Brother stuff.
And we will talk about this, and maybe there is some crossover. I just don't want to lose the Survivor people if we get into Big Brother. But you famously predicted earlier this summer that when we talked about, is Paul the returning player from Big Brother 19? Is this just Boston Rob Redemption Island? Is this just going to be a cakewalk for him over all of these noobs? He was the only returning player in a house full of new players. And we kept saying Boston Rob, Boston Rob, Boston Rob. You tweeted to me, he's not Boston Rob. He's Coach. And that really was something that I talked about it on the podcast, and it was something that was in everybody's minds all through the summer, but sort of like on the back burner, because it really seemed like there was no chance that Paul would lose before he ultimately lost in the final two. You saw that from way back when. So that is the type of insight. And we could talk about Paul specifically later on in a bit, but I just want to get that out there in terms of how tapped in you are.
Thank you. Thank you. You should know that when we were on the island of Survivor, Coach gave us all nicknames, and I'm very self-centric, so I don't remember anybody else's nickname except for my own, which was the Oracle of Delphi, because I was the great predictor, and I've obviously lived up to that name.
Yes, the Oracle of Delphi. So you were tapped in, and so we want to get your take on everything going on Survivor HHH. Are you enjoying this season, Sophie?
That's a good question. I'm not enjoying it. I think there are definitely seasons that like I would watch an episode and be disappointed. I mean, I think it's hard to say that you're not enjoying a Survivor season. I'm certainly part of the camp that like any Survivor season is a good season. But I wrote down notes before the show, and one of my notes is like, why am I not loving this season? And I would think that this would be a season I like. I like not having returnees. I like it that it's not too meta. Like there's not too much talk about like, we need to like make a big move or we're not going to win. And that's usually like sometimes what I criticize, that people are always trying to like fill some kind of shoes that CBS wants them to fill. And there's a good range of characters, but something about it is just like not drawing me in. And I even think that like pagogings can be interesting. Like I think as much as people hate my season of South Pacific, like I thought it was really fascinating the way that my season, there was a story behind the pagoging. There was this story of like us being a family and the Manson family and Coach and religion.
Very timely.
And like, you know, would this all, you know, truly stick together? Or would we fall apart? But I feel like maybe that's
I just want to add in that, when I rewatched your season, I think it really did hold up favorably. Yes. Because, I mean, you guys were an alliance of seven in terms of the pagonging. And they also really yada yada the Savaii. I think they had in the course of like three episodes got rid of like five Savaii members.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Also, I think what's weird about this pagonging and what doesn't grip me is that they had a tribe swap. And so the whole like heroes and hustlers versus healers would make more sense to me as a storyline if there wasn't this tribe swap. To me, it almost feels artificial at this point. And there's so few healers left. It doesn't like, I don't quite understand why the pagonging is happening and what everybody else's plans are. So I feel like it's hard to be drawn in because I personally can't predict week to week necessarily what's going to happen. And you'd think that an unpredictable season would be really fun, but it's hard to like have discussions and guess about what's going to happen in a season when it's just every week seems a little random.
Yeah. And I think that with the tribe swap, it just worked out that all of the people that paired up at the tribe swap happened to be a combination of a hero and a hustler, where you had like Devin and Ashley started working together, and then Ryan and Chrissy were working together, and Ben and Lauren were working together. And there just happened to be like all this connective tissue between those two groups. And maybe that was a factor of that three of the healers swapped together, two of the other healers swapped together, and then poor Rourke was left on her own, and she was the one person that got voted out. And so there was really no commingling, or at least very little. Maybe Dr. Mike was talking with Ben and Lauren, and that's the situation that we find ourselves in. So you feel like that that's the reason why you just feel like that this is going to now go into Joe and Dr. Mike are going to not be able to come back from this, and then the season will begin in your mind?
I have a feeling that the gonging will end. Mostly because, like, as you said, compared to like my season's begonging, where it was one cohesive group, there do seem to be factions within this large seven. And so I don't think it's strong enough to get down to the seven. I wouldn't be surprised if soon it breaks. I think it was easy to continue to begong with Cole as like the nemesis. And potentially if Joe had gone and not Cole, they would have continued. But I have to imagine it's going to end soon with no like big challenge threats on the other side.
Yeah, this is my prediction for Wednesday night, 2 hour Survivor episode. I think either Joe or Mike goes home in the first hour. And I think either the person that's left does not go home in the second hour.
I would agree with that. And I think maybe even neither Joe nor Mike. I feel like we're setting up for like a big power struggle between like Ben and Chrissy and that kind of thing.
So do you think that could happen at this point in time? Was there enough there? Was the groundwork laid over is Ben a dictator? Because you've played with Bens that are dictators before, right?
Yeah. Benjamin Wade. What did Stacey call him?
what was he?
Benjamin.
Benjamin. Do you keep in touch with Stacey Powell?
I wish I could say yes.
I used to keep in touch with her. She used to come on the podcast, and then she stopped writing back to me.
I know. But I mean, this season's lacking a Stacey Powell, right?
Yes.
Like, I'm trying to think of, after the season's over, who are like the big shining, even some of the people who are like kind of fun, who I'm rooting for, I wouldn't necessarily want to see play again. Like, I'm rooting for Lauren because it's just so funny how emotionalist she is and how she should be such a big character and she's not. But like, I don't want to see her another season.
Okay, that's interesting. I feel like that most people have been high on the characters. Now, there is no Stacey Powell. There's only one Stacey Powell in the whole world, and Stacey Powell should play again. But then I feel like that a lot of people have said that they enjoy these characters this season.
Who do they? I mean, I haven't been on Twitter much. Maybe I'm totally missing like what everybody else is thinking. But I guess I'm thinking that a lot of people in this season just seem to be like poor man versions of somebody else.
Okay.
Like you have Ryan, who like just doesn't seem like as great as Cochran. I would say that Chrissy is probably like a better version than a lot of old Chrissy versions. If you would put her, I don't know if you'd put them in the category of who's the woman who hit the shoes or whatever.
Holly Hoffman?
Does she go in the Holly Hoffman category? That's probably an insult to Chrissy.
Yeah, I don't see her as a Holly Hoffman. That I think that I don't know. I feel like she's somewhere in between. I feel like that in some ways that she's like somewhere between, I would say, Kim and Mama C. I feel like that she's somewhere in that mold where she's like more strategic, but like less just natural charisma.
Yeah, Chrissy's a standout, but like Joe, he's another Tony. Mm-hmm. Who am I missing? Are there really
what
great
about
characters?
Dr. Mike?
Yeah, Dr. Mike's a cutie. I could watch Dr. Mike again. I thought Dr. Mike this last episode was super funny. Mm-hmm. But maybe this is like, I feel like as super fans of the show, we always want to, we want the show to show like all the characters, right? Like everybody's always clamoring, like talk to everybody in the reunion show, like build out all the storylines. And we hate ones that are like lopsided and everybody's invisible. And this season, I feel like maybe I'm wrong. I'm totally wrong, but it feels like it's not very lopsided. It feels like there's a lot of people getting airtime other than JP. And so maybe the thing is that like, that's just like harder for me. It's been harder to like get attached to certain characters because everybody's kind of interesting and it's like interesting their dynamics, but there's no like standout characters to me that like, oh my God, I would love to see this person play again.
Okay. So I feel like that we're getting a lot of notes from you in terms of how to improve this. So, I mean, what is the situation? So is it more that the casting, you feel like that the casting is too derivative, or do you feel like, I know that another common complaint is, okay, there's too many advantages. that's the problem, why people haven't really connected with this season?
Man, I feel like I'm being such a downer because I love Survivor and I'm like loving watching this season. But the advantages thing is like a whole nother conversation. We can get into the advantages. My thought on the advantages is like, do you think there's too many? I think there's too many. Or like,
I think that they've corrected it to the point where I know that it's, you know, people say that there's too many, but most of them had to be used immediately. I mean, now in the game, I mean, we just saw Mike use his idol. The only person that has a real idol is Ryan. There's also a fake idol and Lauren has an extra vote. I mean, I don't think that that's like a unwieldy number of advantages or that we're heading into some sort of like advantage get in like last season.
Yeah, I guess one of the things I was wondering is a lot of times when there are advantages on Survivor, there are things that people predict might happen. So like everybody knows there could be an idol in play or on the Redemption Island, right? That was a very open twist. It was like, okay, well, we know that at one point, we don't know when, but at some point somebody's going to come back from Redemption Island. And the thing I'm wondering with these advantages is if you add like a lot of variables into the game and advantages into the game, that nobody knows about, it becomes like even more random. I don't mind people having to like duck and cover and like figure out advantages, but when they're totally new advantages that people don't even like know could exist, they just like, you can't even adjust your gameplay. And I feel like that makes the game even more based on luck and even more difficult for people who, you know, are about to get blindsided to work their way out of it. And I don't think that's happened that much this season, but like, if somebody had gone on, like if on Chrissy's advantage, she had played it and like one of our favorite players had gone in the first episode, like it would have felt a bit like, well, that was coming from nowhere. Like, I feel like that they have the risk of just adding like a totally random yellow white rock into every episode. And I wish that people were expecting them.
And that was the problem with ultimately what happened to Malcolm last season, where it's like, okay, we injected this really exciting game mechanic into the equation, but then ultimately somebody who people wanted to watch ended up going out. We've talked about this a lot on Big Brother, I'm sure, as you recall, over the summer, in terms of when change up and put so many things into the game, it can also have the effect of making players play more tight. And yes, that there are sort of like these big moments that may happen, but people may be sort of like less inclined to really put themselves out there because that their move that they're planning could get undone by a twist. And I do wonder if it might be better for the game from an organic sense, where if Joe, instead of like tearing the island apart, looking for the next idol or advantage, what if he was pouring all that time into trying to make inroads with that other alliance? And perhaps there could be, instead of like Joe and Mike being saved by finding an idol or an advantage, Joe and Mike being saved by pulling three of the hustlers over to vote with them at that next vote.
Yeah, I totally agree. I just want to see them respond to the advantages. So like Lauren's advantage was a good one, and that they should have all realized that there was one less vote. And like, I would want that then to cause them to change their gameplay and to think about like, oh my God, what could have happened? There was one less vote. Can somebody not vote for the next three tribals? What's happening? But when it's something that's happening that nobody else knows happens and just has like a blind effect on the game, that feels like, well, what's the point? You're just changing the game, but you're not shifting any behavior.
Yeah, but you can't blame production on that, you know, if you believe what Jeff said to Dalton Ross, we have no reason not to. He said they wanted somebody to stand up and say, hey, there were only 10 votes. There are 11 people here. Yeah. Nobody seemed to notice. And if they did, they didn't make a big fuss about it. Is that something that you would have identified when you were out there?
I don't know. I mean, I think the problem is you're so stupid when you're out there. Like if a twist has not happened before, like, I don't know if you can think of it.
Should they feed the players more?
No. What's crazy though is I just watched the Ponderosa with Cole, and even Cole and Desi at Ponderosa are like eating, can't figure out what happened. They think that like Jeff just didn't read a vote because it wasn't relevant to the outcome. Mm-hmm. It's just nuts how I wonder if this season, you know how in Big Brother, like the whole motto is expect unexpected. I wonder if this season is going to turn all Survivor players into like having Big Brother mindsets of expecting the unexpected.
How so?
Well, I think this is the most creative season when it comes to the twist, which I've liked. Like I like the cool ways, like secret messages to other players. I thought they've like the twists themselves have been way really cool and a big improvement over just 20 idols in the season. Mm-hmm. But I just wonder if seasons going forward, people are going to start assuming or thinking that there might be secrets in play that are actually not in play, and like even overthinking. Like if you think about today, everybody's always splitting the votes. Like what is the next iteration of splitting the votes that people start doing to like protect against anything that could be out there?
Yeah. Well, I think that's kind of what they were going for last season when they injected that rule of, oh, OK, well, you could split the votes, but if it ends up being a tie vote, then it automatically would go to Rock. So yeah, it's not something that you can do, where over the last few seasons, really since Tyson in Blood versus Water, that it was like, hey, or Sierra, hey, go to Rocks, play the game, go for a tie. That's a good move to make. We want a Rock draw. But let me ask you it this way. So let's say hypothetically that Mark Burnett called you tomorrow and pretend this was all happening in real time. It's like, Sophie, the network, they're on my ass. We need you to save the season. Okay, so they fly you out to Fiji, okay? You're now the showrunner here at the final nine. Is there something that you could do in terms of, would you be more hands-on or more hands-off with everything the rest of the way?
You mean to spice this season up a little bit?
Would you say that the answer is, more seasoning, or the answer is, okay, let's not put another idol out there. Let's not put another advantage out there.
I feel like the season doesn't need more seasoning. I mean, that's why I'm excited for the end of the season, is I feel like there's enough seasoning in there and it's just like boiling and it's cooking.
Yeah.
And pretty soon it's going to be like ready to eat. And I feel like Jeff has been promising this for a while. Like, oh, guys, it's going to get good. And I feel like it has to be ready to eat soon.
Sophie, if you watch the preview for this next episode, that there's literally a clip of Dr. Mike saying like, now it's going to get good. like that is literally in the promo.
Because they know what all the viewers are thinking. And they're like, wait, no, now.
Yeah.
No, it's hard. And I think also, Rob, probably as players, maybe we're on different sides of this, but I think also as a player, I prefer less twists. And so I think it's hard as a player to like, or as a viewer to forget that like, oh my God, if I was out there, I would hate all these twists.
Yep.
But probably as a viewer, like when there's a pagonging, it's like, you know, especially in the early episodes, it was fun seeing the secret being passed, the way that it forged an alliance between, you know, Ryan and Chrissy. I'm probably being like a little bit of like a old school bummer on this. I don't know if I can call myself old school, but being a little bit of a, you know, super fan.
Yeah, I think that what you're saying, I've definitely heard that from people. I feel like I've been higher on this season than most, maybe because I was sort of like down on Game Changers by the time we got to the end of it. But I mean, I feel like that this has been a fun group. We don't know who the winner is going to be. I feel like it's still pretty unpredictable. And there is also this promise of, okay, well, there's going to be this exciting end to the season. So I think in terms of like there being like this really great third act of the season, I think that there could be some sort of a halo effect based on how we view the first half of the season.
Yeah. And it may make the first half of the season all worth it, like an investment to get our payoff.
Yeah.
We might at the end be like, man, I would go through that 10 times more.
Okay.
I think that's the thing of like, sorry, last thing. It's just that I think if you could guarantee that people were going to like make their own excitement without anything, obviously that would be ideal. But given that like sometimes casts suck and sometimes like it's just the way the tribe swap happens, it doesn't cause the excitement. Like I'm okay with people hedging their bets and injecting a little fun.
Right. I mean, there's no possible way as a production you can ensure that every single vote in Survivor is going to be exciting or interesting. You're going to get boring votes. So, you know, production has to do their part to try to keep, you know, they're looking out for the viewer and trying to make it as exciting as possible every single time so that there's at least the chance that the unpredictable could happen, but at the same time, keeping the game fair. So it's a thankless job.
I agree.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sophie, let's talk about this past week and Dr. Mike and this gambit that he ended up making to potentially, from what we've been able to reason based on what Jeff Probst has said in some interviews, that Dr. Mike's play here was to ensure that Cole went home, who he didn't want anything to do with, but keep Joe in the game at the expense of the idol. Did you think that there was some wisdom here, or this was crazy talk?
I didn't even realize that's what he was doing.
Yeah.
I assumed if he thought he was being successful, mm-hmm, and he thought he was sending Cole home, why did he play the idol?
Because he wanted to try to get the votes on him. And then just in case, I don't know if he thought that there was a danger that he was going to go home, or if he thought that he was going to try to draw the votes onto him. But according to what Jeff said to Dalton Ross, he wanted to protect Joe, who he wanted to still work with, but ensure that Cole went home, who he didn't want to work with.
Got it. So his whole thing about loyalty and playing a good game or a moral game was trying to make people think that he wanted them to vote for Joe. Is that what it was? And that he would play the idol on Joe?
I don't know what, again, we'll have to wait and see what we get in the episode. I'm not sure what Dr. Mike was doing, because I feel like the Dr. Mike was in this really good position where he was working his way back in with the, you know, like Joe was acting crazy, but he was being the person who was being, you know, very, you know, well behaved and seemed like he was like a contributing member of the tribe. But then at this tribal council, he really started to act out.
Yeah, I was totally confused. I think the only thing that made the most sense to me, which to me spells Mike's doom a little bit, unless he can get his act together, and maybe getting rid of his idol is going to get his act together. But to me, what this was in this episode was like, he made some comment like, I've learned everybody's betrayed me. I've learned that I can't trust anyone. And so to me, this is like the bratty little kid who like, people aren't nice to for a day. And so then they're like, okay, well, I'm going to be like a total menace and ruin everybody's lives. Like, I just felt like this was him being like, okay, if you guys aren't going to play my game, like I'm going to play by myself. And he like went off into his own little world and like did all this shit and like, you know, went and what's the Roadrunner to dust circles basically. And like by the end of it, when the dust fell, like I feel like he didn't really have much impact. And so I guess what I'm wondering is he seemed to me like somebody who decided like, I'm a lone wolf. Like this is like, I got to go bigger. Like I'm going to go home, bigger go home. And I wonder if after this episode, now that the dust is going to be settled and he's still in the game and Joe's still in the game, but he's lost his idol. Like, is he going to be able to regroup and like get rid of that mindset? Because I think the mindset of like, you can't trust anyone like is never going to help you in Survivor. Like, I think you should at least be able to always trust other people's motivations and be able to like, get knowledge out of them. Like it didn't even seem to me like he totally dismissed Ben's thing of like, we're all voting for Cole, which is like what they ended up doing. He could have saved Cole with his idol. Mm-hmm. Although maybe he would have gone home. I don't remember the votes, but either way, like it feels like unless he is able to like stop being on an island by himself, like this could be the end for him.
Do you think that Dr. Mike saw what Joe was doing in the episode where Joe was saying, I'm going to make myself be as unlikable as possible, and then people will want to keep me around? And Dr. Mike said, hey, I'll have what he's having, and I too need to make myself as unlikable as possible so people keep me around also and want to take me to the final three.
I mean, I guess that's what it was. Remind me, if Mike had played his idol correctly, would he have been able potentially to send home one of the seven?
So if you say correctly, you mean by giving it to Cole, because Cole had the majority of votes. So the way that the votes went, I think that if Mike would have played his idol on Cole, then Mike would have gone home because there were two votes still for Mike.
Oh,
so
there weren't three votes for somebody else.
No, there was one vote for Ben. That was from Cole. Mike and Joe also voted for Cole.
God, it's so confusing. It's so confusing. I think he just got shit scared and played his idol.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, he tried to do this. To me, when I was watching it, it's like, did you ever play the game Code Names?
No.
Oh, okay, never mind. But anyway, yeah, it seems like he had this whole plan in his head, which may not have worked. I think they were going to vote out Cole anyway. But the idol play to me seemed excessive. I also think that like you have to play to your strengths, right? Like Joe's strength is obviously being like an asshole who's super annoying. I'm not sure like Mike is ever going to be able to really successfully pull that off without just looking like super sneaky and strange. Like it didn't seem like people react to Joe being an asshole by being like, you're an asshole. People didn't react to Mike that way in the tribal. They were just like, what the hell are you talking about? So I just don't think he's playing to his strengths.
My idea for Mike was that if he wouldn't have done anything, you know, let Cole go out, let Joe go out next. And then I felt like that he was not going to be the person that was going to go home next out of that group. Do you think that that was a safe bet, or do you think that we would have seen Mike potentially targeted even before Joe, the same way that Dawn was targeted by Upulu, because Dawn was the one who was acting, very friendly and seemed to be, you know, trying to make inroads with you guys?
So I feel like in my season, getting out Dawn was almost more about a jury threat. It was a little bit about inroads, but a lot about jury. where, and they were so even on challenges. Whereas I feel like the seven, like, obviously has this schism, right? They're already talking about Ben being a dictator. We would have never dared to voice that about Coach in a complaining kind of way. So they're already talking about Ben being a dictator. There's already this like girl split. There's already the Ryan with the idol. So I feel like there's enough schisms that you would think that enough people within those schisms would want to keep somebody like Mike around, because they don't want to work with Joe. Like, the only person to work with Joe is Ben. They don't want to work with Cole, who's going to win all the challenges. Like, I feel like Mike's in a really sweet spot. Mike must have some inroads from the swap tribe. Like, he should. What baffled me in this episode is that Mike should not be the person who is like pulling the Troyzan. I'm like on an island. This is my island. I'm alone here. Like, Mike should be the person who's like making friends and like figuring out this social game and getting to the end. Like, it seems like the move of him being like the idol king who's going to like piss everyone off is just not what's going to work for him.
It's very confusing to know what Mike was up to there in that episode. So I have a lot of questions for you, Sophie, from the listeners of the podcast. Let me dig into some of these as we are going through all of this stuff. So let me play you this question. This is from Humberto, who has a question for you about the seven.
Hey, Rav, this is Humberto calling from Miami. It's usually really annoying when the big alliance pagons the other people and they stay together, because you can always see who's in the top and who's in the bottom. And it's hard to see the Christina Chats of the world not doing something about it. But in this case, I think it's very different. There's so many combinations about it. You got the Ben and Chrissy. You got Ryan and Chrissy. You get JP and Ashley, Devin and Ben, Devin and Ryan. Like, there's so many combinations of what people should do to should be together. Who's going to take whom to the end? So which one do you think it's the main four or the two voting blocks of two that will prevail?
So this seven is very complicated. And I feel like that the seven of the Upolu plus Cochran, I feel like was certainly less complicated than this sort of mishmash of all these different pairs that make up this group of seven here, the Knights of the Round Table.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, that's a very Coach name. You know, you got a guy named Ben who's running things, being called a dictator, Knights of the Round Table. Is this South Pacific Part 2?
No. But
you have poor man's Cochran.
That's true. That's true. You, I don't know. Chrissy could be a Don, maybe. Mm-hmm. Not really. Yeah, I mean, I think that I could see some strong two staying together, like Ashley and JP. I think the key to this is going to be like, who within this truly has the ability to be a chameleon and like go between groups? And what groups is he going to choose? He or she going to choose? And I feel like the person of the seven who like has this ability is going to be Devin. Mm-hmm. Devin seems to have like inroads on the Ben side. He has inroads on the Ryan side. I assume he has some kind of relationship with Lauren. He's easygoing enough that I could see him like thinking if like Ashley and JP were his best options of going that way. I also think that he has managed so far to be like one of the centers of information without being a like Ben, but without calling a lot of attention to it and being the person who's calling the shots. And so I would say that like, it's hard to say, okay, these three people are on top, these couple people are on bottom. But I would definitely see Devin as somebody who might potentially be a linchpin in making those decisions. Yes, like, going forward.
He really has emerged after this week as one of the major players in the season. And Steven and I talked about this a lot on Wednesday night. Brendan Fitzpatrick wants to know that the main takeaway from the Tyson cast and the other podcast this week is that people are starting to see something special in Devin. What do you see in Devin? Are you buying that he could be the secret major player in this season? Or do you think that he is maybe more important than we thought, but maybe not ready to call him this great luminary of the game?
We should call him whatever he called himself. What did he call himself? A bright, shining star or something?
I think that was Dirk Diggler. I think that was.
But yeah. So I rewatched this episode today before I talked to you, and I was writing down about Devin, and I was like, people are so drawn to him. Why? Like, I can't figure out what it is. And then I started to think like, he's doing all of the things that everybody else is failing to do on this season. He's like doing that classic thing that is so hard to do on Survivor, which is listen and like not talk and make everybody else feel like it's their idea. And obviously like some of it is just because he's like a chill dude, but I watched today, there was a secret scene or like a secret confessional with him. And the title of it was like, I'm playing a fantastic game.
Yes.
And it made me love Devin even more because not only he's not just doing this because he's Devin and he's chill and he's from California. Like he knows what he's doing. He knows that he is like managing his relationship with Ben and with Ryan, like in a way that's like putting him in a position to succeed.
So in that secret scene, he talks about how, you know, I'm letting Ben call the shots, but I'm really calling the shots. It doesn't look like I'm doing anything because I'm going along with them. But if they ever tried to do something that I didn't want to do, I would stop that. To me, that sounded very much like something I might hear you say in Survivor South Pacific of that. Yeah, maybe it doesn't look like I am doing something, but it's because everybody is doing what I want them to do. And if we get to the point where they're trying to do something that I don't want to happen, I'll stop it. The hard part for me is going to be explaining that in the end. Would you say that Devin is in a similar position to where you were in your season?
Super similar. And I related to that a lot. But I feel like Devin did not even say what's going to be hard is convincing them at the end. I think he just said, like, and I'm going to convince them at the end. Like, I have a plan. I'm going to do it. And what's interesting is I remember having that same mindset of being like, I know I'm calling the shots. I know things are going my way. And I know that, like, I am not just bobbing along. And if I wanted something to go differently, I could make it happen. And then I also felt similarly confident of like, and I know that I'm going to get the credit for at the end. I'm going to make that happen. Looking back now, I realized that like, I think I was a little naive in thinking it would be so easy to get the credit at the end. And I think that like, I had a special confluence of circumstances that allowed me to get the credit. But I worry about somebody like Devin that in your own head, like, everything's going my way. I'm making it happen. Like, I'm making everybody think it's them. I think it's harder than he thinks to convince a jury of that. Because if you've done a really good job of convincing them that it's their decision and they still think it's their decision, then telling them, hey, it wasn't your decision is like a lot harder than it sounds. So I definitely worry about Devin about like, will he truly be able to pull that off or not?
So to tie in the Big Brother 19 of it all, going back to, you know, you compared Paul to, you know, who was somebody who pissed off a lot of people on the jury in that season. Obviously, Coach pissed off a lot of people from Savaii. In your season, Devin could potentially go to the end in this game, but do you think that somebody in this particular season could be that person that everybody goes to the end with such hard feelings?
No, I worry about that. I mean, I think that Joe could be one of those people. And I think as much as Joe would say, like, oh, I was pissing you off on purpose, I think people like Chrissy and Ashley are obviously so over him that they're not going to vote for him. What I worry about Devin is that there's not enough of those kind of people. And in fact, the leaders of the tribe, people like Ben, I imagine people would respect when they got to the end. And it'd be hard when you get to the end, you have Ben, who you liked, I mean, you told everyone you liked him. And then you have Devin saying, it wasn't Ben, it was me. Like, you're not only having to believe Devin that he called the shots, but you're also having to not vote for somebody you like. So I think what's going to be interesting is seeing where Devin takes his game. And like, does he have to take, he basically said in the secret scene, like, I can take control if I need to. I want to like know what is the point that he has to take control and like, what is his final three? Mm-hmm. Like hopes.
Really good points in terms of going to the end. It looked like it was Ben approaching Devin in terms of trying to work together and opening up in terms of potential end game consideration. Do you think was that a good idea on Ben's part to try to get Devin involved in his end game?
With Ben, I feel like Ben plays very well in power. And he's good at it. And so I think that it probably makes sense for Ben to try to like keep that power as long as possible and to bring people in as long as possible. And I think that you have these three people in the situation. You have Ben, Devin, and Ryan. I think you could say that like Ben probably made the right move, right? He wasn't giving up really his own information. Mm-hmm. He was like giving up somebody else's information to make an ally. Devin like obviously always made the great move because he got two people to tell him something. And Ryan is the one who really came out in the bottom of all of that. I also think that Ben Ben like needs as many followers and people with him as possible. And if anything, like Ben doesn't have an allegiance to Ryan. Like he can just deflect. Like if that went poorly, he can deflect to Ryan.
See, I think it was pretty risky because if that went poorly, I mean, Ryan and Devin were really tight from the beginning of the game. I mean, Ben doesn't necessarily know that Devin's not going to go back to Ryan and say, hey, guess what Ben just told me? He told me that you told him the idol. Like, oh, why did he do that? Oh, I hate Ben. Okay, now we have to get rid of Ben.
Yeah, but like either way, like if Ben goes into it and thinks Devin doesn't know that Ryan has the idol, right, then he knows Devin's going to be pissed that Ryan didn't tell him. And if Ben goes into it knowing that Devin knows that Ryan has the idol, then like Devin's going to be pissed because Ryan didn't tell him that he was going to tell Ben. Mm-hmm. To me, like the only person this could have turned out poorly for is Ryan. The only way it would have been a bad move, in my idea, would be if Ben truly wanted to like be super tight with Ryan. And that was his number one person. And he thought that like, you know, Ryan and Ryan's idol were going to be the key to his success. No. To me, and maybe I heard this scene wrong, but to me, this scene wasn't like necessarily about like, I don't feel like Ben took Ryan's idol information to be like me and you to the end. Like I'm ditching all my heroes. It's got, like you're my main guy now.
Mm-hmm. No,
I don't think Ben was using this much more as currency, and he did it successfully.
Right. And, you know, he gave away Ryan's secret to Devin, not Lauren's secret. So that also tells us who he cares more about. But so if you're going to untangle this from Ben's perspective, okay, so Ben says in a secret scene that, okay, we need to get Cole out and then Joe and then Mike. That was the order mm-hmm. that he's saying. So let's just grant him that. And it gets down to the seven. How do you think that he is going to chop up that seven if he had it his way the whole way through? Because we've seen him be, he is tight with, obviously, now Devin, but he also has been tight with Chrissy since the beginning. He's tight with Lauren, and all those people aren't necessarily, you know, working with one another. So I think you would presume that he's going to try to get JP and maybe Ashley out next, but I don't know how he does that. Do you see a path for him?
I see Ben as being a leader of a group, and I don't think he necessarily needs or wants to like have a tight alliance that is his goal to get to the three. I think also Ben is like, thinks he's great and like he's in charge. And I think Ben probably thinks that like whoever he got to the end with, he'd win. Like I doubt he's threatened by that many people. So I see Ben's end game as like deflecting attention as much as he can and voting out whoever the group like agrees to vote out. So like going like Ryan would be like a good option. Ryan's a good option because of the idol, like getting Devin to turn from the idol. JP's a good option like because he's like big and tough and strong and is going to win stuff.
Yeah.
Like Chrissy's probably been very sneaky. Like I feel like if he can do a good job of just getting a core group, I mean, which is what he's done this whole game, right?
I think you make a good point. I think actually Ryan is probably most at risk from that group of seven because we already have some evidence that Ben thinks that Ryan could be a sketchy character and potentially somebody who could maybe turn the tables on him and probably is somebody that he would want to get out. So he could be literally in the Cochran spot as the first one out in the seven.
Yeah, I agree.
Wow.
I wouldn't be surprised.
South Pacific 2.
Heard it here first.
So who's the Sophie if it's not Devin?
Are we not giving it to Devin? It's Devin.
I guess Devin is Sophie too?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll take it. He's cute.
Okay. Let me give you some more questions from people. This is from Amanda Rabinowitz. Please tell Sophie she's my favorite survivor ever. Also, what is Sophie's take on Chrissy's game and the heat she's getting from the Survivor internet and some of the recent boots? Now, I know that you said you have not been on Twitter very much this season. Have you been following any of the backlash to Chrissy?
No, tell me.
Okay, so that four of the women who had come out of the game in a row, starting with Rourke, then Allie, then Jessica, then Desi, they all said in one way or another that Chrissy, it gave them the impression that she was intimidated by smart women and did not want to work closely or at least have in the end game any of the other strong females that were on the season. And basically, one after another, even though this really hasn't been portrayed on the show, all of them said that in their exit interviews, punctuated the most by Desi, who really went after Chrissy in one particular exit interview.
Wow. I'm really surprised to hear that. I guess I would say that I wouldn't want to take anything for face value until I hear like Chrissy's response. I guess I'm just thinking of my own Survivor game. I think there might be reasons on Survivor that you might not want to work with women, or you might have a reason to have a male alliance.
Because you worked with more men than women in South Pacific.
Yeah, I worked with all men, I guess, Edna, but I'm not sure you could say I really worked with her that closely.
She was there.
She was there. But like, I think about my experience and like deciding, given the circumstances, that I felt like a male, the men in my tribe would have been a better alliance for me. Mostly because I thought that they were like less smart and more into themselves than the women were. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's like, then again, these people live with Chrissy, so I can't say anything, but I just think it's, just because you vote women out on Survivor or, you know, decide not to align with women, I think that like that's, to me, that seems like a big leap to then say that you're a woman hater or like don't like women. Mm-hmm. So I would want to give like Chrissy the benefit of the doubt on that and hear her perspective. I find it hard to believe that there's like a woman out there just voting people out because she's jealous of them or like has, I don't know, whatever the reason is.
Is it a compliment? Is it a compliment to the other women of, hey, I think all the men are dumb here and I'm worried about, like, I know I could take all these guys, but if anybody's going to get me out of this game, it's going to be one of these women. I have to get rid of them.
Yeah, right? Like, in a way, like, every time you vote somebody out, it's a compliment. It's saying, like, I mean, you're not choosing, like, baseball teams here, right? Like, you're trying to, like, vote people out until there's $1 million left. I find, like, If the argument is truly just like she wouldn't have an alliance with us, she voted us out, like that seems petty. Mm-hmm. But then again, like they lived with her, so who knows? Chrissy, I find like difficult to read. I feel like she's played a super, super solid game. Do you think she's going to make it to the end? And do you think, I guess this, what would worry me is if she makes it to the end, she wouldn't win. If this is people's perception of her.
I mean, that's kind of where I think she is right now. I kind of see her in that mold of like everything that we talked about in coming into the season of like, boy, she's in that archetype of the, you know, older and older for Survivor. The woman who gets to the end and then ends up sort of being chewed out by the jury. Could she potentially be on that path? And, you know, based on not necessarily what we're seeing on the show, but the kinds of things that we're hearing in the exit press, that makes me feel like that could be her ultimate fate this season.
Mm-hmm. Do you think she's a great player?
I think that she is a very good player. I wouldn't say that she is a great player. And I feel like that the thing that she is lacking is I'm not seeing that real likability that, you know, where the other players are sort of like raving about, you know, how wonderful she is to be around.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's true.
You know, I think you want people who are, you know, make the experience more fun for you. I mean, did you have somebody on your season? Who was that? I mean, was it Cochran? Or he?
Brandon Hance.
He was the jovial guy.
Yeah. He was the jovial guy.
Yeah. And you're not joking for anybody who, you know.
No, I'm not joking. He made the day more fun. I think the other thing with Chrissy is that we've seen her, like, I guess I wonder, was a lot of her moves, they were of her own making, right? I think of the Ryan relationship, and I really see that as a feat by Ryan, not necessarily a feat by Chrissy. And I just wonder if she got herself into a good position in the game through, you know, keeping this alliance with Ryan and having her alliance with the heroes. But I wonder, like, is this going to be enough? And does she need to now, you know, take a little more control? And it seemed like this episode she almost did. And she almost, like, took over the reins from Ben. And it seemed like she was leading a little bit of a revolt about, you know, voting for Cole. But she ended up losing. And so that definitely tips me off on something of, like, she doesn't have as much power as she thinks she has. Especially given that she's the kind of player, she's not trying to play a subtle game like Devin, right? She's like trying to make things go her way, which is like she wanted things to go her way and she got rid of Desi. She wanted things to go right away and got rid of Rourke. And like she wanted things to go her way and she did not get rid of Joe. And so I wonder, like, what does that mean for the rest of her game?
If you're going to paint the scenario for Chrissy for her to win, what does she need to do? Because I feel like that if she just like knocks out Ben at the final four, is that going to be enough for her to win?
I feel like she needs to like make it happen such that she's at the end with Ashley and JP, who to me seem like the biggest goats of the season.
Yes.
And I think that like if she's playing the game of like, I'm in control, I'm calling the shots, well, then you better play that game so well that you bring two goats to the end. Like mm-hmm. It's not enough to get to the end with Devin, who's going to beat you.
So do you have any thoughts on JP?
I didn't even write down a single thought. Yeah. Has he had a single confessional? Poor guy. I liked his little butt thing in the immunity challenge, though.
Yes. What was that?
War challenge.
What was that thing?
He had an adjustment that the editors like called attention to, like shook his butt around. Like, it was like a very obvious like moment of airtime for JP.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm disappointed with is I feel like Survivor could do a little bit of a better job, like Big Brother does, of kind of making fun of itself when it does that to people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought that Big Brother and CBS, right, like had some kind of breakthrough with Cody on Big Brother this season of saying, okay, like you're not going to be what is a traditionally interesting character, but we're going to make you being so boring interesting. And I feel like they could do that more on Survivor instead of just being like, you're not the kind of person we want you to be. Like, we're not going to show you our time.
I agree with your thesis, but I disagree with the person that they did it with in Big Brother. That I feel like that they tried to do that more with, say, like somebody like a Matt, where it's like Matt was somebody who was like a nothing on the show. Mm. And they tried to turn like, oh, he eats cereal all the time. He only has one shirt. I feel like that they tried to turn that into a thing more so. Like Cody was just more like that. He was, to me, you know, brilliant casting, and that he was the only person ever on the show who wasn't like trying to be on the show. Like everybody is like so on all the time. He was the only person that was like, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not. I don't care. I don't want to be on TV. It was like he was there against his will. I think that was what was interesting about him as a player. I do feel like that Lauren has that a little bit. What do you think about Lauren?
So I mean, I think I haven't paid enough attention to her. And then I wondered after this episode, given that she got like a little more time, won the challenge, has she been this like kind of, and maybe I'm like, I really haven't paid attention to her, but to me, it seems like she has the characteristic of being kind of like emotionless, even when she should not be that emotionless. She's kind of like so laid back about everything. She won this immunity, like no big deal. To like make these snarky comments, but I feel like it hasn't been highlighted enough to be like, oh, ha ha, like good old Lauren. I feel like it's maybe just like coming to me. Is there a side of her that I'm missing?
No, well, I think that she's really just like no nonsense. I think that's what's sort of fun about her. She did win the immunity this week, which was great. I mean, this was really the Lauren Rimmer immunity challenge.
Really? Was it?
I mean, I feel like that this was the challenge that if you were going to design a challenge for her to win, I mean, I feel like this was it.
Why? Is that a fisherman? Is that a fisherman kind of challenge?
No, I just feel like she has like the perfect body for this in terms of just like squat,
broad,
you know,
shoulders.
Just do it.
Yeah,
do it. Like be like, I think like the taller you are, I think it's harder to do. She just has like she's the perfect person to win this challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd like to see more of her.
She's been fun. You know, I think that she has, you know, has some good lines where, you know, she was told her to stop talking. And she's like, all right, I'm going to, you know, let you do your thing. And with Dr. Mike, you know, like, do you want me to hand you the shovel so you could bury yourself? She went after Patrick after when they were at the tribal council together. So I think that she's been you know, you talk about there's so many people on this season that are sort of like derivatives of other players. I feel like that she's probably the most original of any of these cast members that we have.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Okay.
Are you rooting for Lauren? Like if you were rooting for someone, which you don't do because you're unbiased media.
Yeah, I would be fine with Lauren winning. I wouldn't say that I think it would be interesting and she's an original, but I wouldn't say necessarily like, you know, I also like people that are, you know, really pushing the limits of the game as well.
Yeah. So who would you be rooting for?
Boy, this is a dangerous hypothetical, Sophie.
All right.
I would say, you know, there's still so much to go. I mean, somebody like let's say hypothetically, what if the season goes from this point where, you know, Dr. Mike goes on this amazing run of can he go from being all the way at the bottom to ultimately winning the game? You know, I certainly would be rooting for that. You know, if somebody, let's say, you know, Chrissy goes on to, you know, play remarkably well over, you know, I root for the best player, Sophie.
All right. That's
okay. Fair. All right. Let me get this back in your wheelhouse. Laura Olson wants to know, Sophie, can you give us the clean down? Costa wants to know, who's the cleanest player this season?
Man,
I know
that's
the answer
a good
to
thing.
This. I know the answer to this.
You do know the answer?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm trying to go through people. The people who stand out to me as the cleanest would probably be Devin and Chrissy are incredibly clean. Not Lauren or Ryan.
Why not Lauren? Because it's been a thing. She has a white hat, Sophie, and her white hat has remained remarkably white throughout the whole season.
I would also say not Chrissy. I would actually say Devin.
Devin.
Lauren. I guess Lauren would be up there. If I had to add, I might even put Lauren above Chrissy. Mm-hmm. But Devin is by far the cleanest.
Why do you say that? What is he doing?
It's hard to describe what it means to be clean, but it doesn't mean keeping a white hat clean. It means like just looking like you've just come out of the shower and just had a haircut and have a little bit of like TV makeup on. And I feel like Devin's skin, a lot of it is skincare too. Devin's skin in HD is like sparkling.
Yeah. So is it whoever wears the island look the best? Is that part of it?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's super hard to be clean on the island. I also think that islands set the clean apart from the unclean. And I think that Devin has been very set apart in this season.
Okay. Let me give you this question. This is from John Tinkham. In South Pacific, your alliance of five stayed loyal until the five plus Ozzy. And it's looking like this season could be similar with the non-healer seven. Once you get to that point, what's the best advice to stay ahead of the pack when you have to start backstabbing your closest allies so that you can still get enough jury votes to win? Okay, so if you're one of the people in the seven, well, what's your advice in terms of staying ahead of the chopping block?
Gosh, I feel like in my season, I had a little bit of a different situation where my advice was to control the narrative of the game. And so I feel like Mike was almost trying to do that. But instead of trying to target like who is going to go out, control the narrative of the game and say, like, you know, guys, this is a game where we're like, we really care about loyalty. And like, if you go against us, then like the whole thing is shot and the whole thing's going to blow up. Or like, this is a game where, I don't know, the healers are going to stick together. I feel like sometimes what's important is to like get some kind of groupthink going on and not let the whole thing devolve into the final three or the final two right away. Because if it comes to the seven and all they're thinking about is the final three and final two, then I think you just have a really stressful end game where you're never, ever in a good spot. And I think what you want to do is like within that seven, create like an even smaller group. I mean, it's like the onion strategy or whatever. But I feel like you need to like control that narrative and control like, why are we voting out people? Why are we targeting people? Like, what is our goal as a group going forward? Because I feel like if you aren't able to control the narrative, then you might end up being kind of the plot line.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is that true for life too, Sophie?
That's true for life too.
Yes. Control the narrative or you could be part of the plot line.
Yeah, that would be my advice. Are we done here?
Okay, yes. Nikki has a question for you, Sophie. How much of Joe's game of getting under people's skin is just him being butthurt because he's on the outs and is just hangry and annoyed and then retroactively labeling it as strategy? I feel like Sophie is such a great authority since she dealt with a diva-like coach.
Yes, that's totally true. I would say a lot of it is being butthurt. If that's, I don't even know what that means. I think I do know what that means. Mm-hmm.
I think you know what it means.
I would say, yeah, I think I know it. I think I could figure it out. I think a lot of it is being butthurt. I think that whenever you hear somebody say like, nobody's playing the game, nobody wants to make moves. It's like, no, nobody's playing with you and nobody wants to make moves with you. Like, I feel like Sierra Easton was like the first person to really like have this line. And it's infuriating and like boring to watch because I feel like the casual viewers glom onto it and they're like, you're right, Joe. Like Joe's the only one making moves. But if you're somebody else, and I experienced this a lot in my season, like Don and Whitney and all of them before they left, they like their whole thing was like, none of you guys are making moves. And if you're Devin, you're sitting there like, shut up, like I am making moves. I just don't want anybody to know about it. So I do think that like when anybody complains that nobody else is making moves, it shows like a little bit of lack of awareness of the fact that like the problem isn't that people aren't making moves. The problem is that they don't want to make moves with you.
Yeah.
And then I also just think that like, sure, Joe's strategy of getting people to hate him so much they don't vote him out seems to be working. But like we all know that's only really possible for somebody like Joe who has the ability to be so annoying. Like you can't be like what? Like Ashley, is Ashley going to try that strategy? It almost seemed like Mike, right? We saw Mike try to try that strategy. It was like, what the hell is going on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I am fascinated to see if this is going to work though, because I feel like watching Survivor for the last like 10 years or whatever, ever since Philip was on the show, which I feel like was the first prototype of this. I remember Philip's first season. I remember thinking, if Philip can just stand up at the end and say, guys, it was all a joke. Like, I'm a normal human being and I fooled you all. Like, he could win. And I feel like there's been so many versions of that character of you just want them to stand up at the end and say, ha ha, like, I got you. I'm not an asshole. I'm not annoying. And I feel like Joe is the first person who could legitimately do that because he's doing it the opposite way. He's like, you know, he's forethought it.
Yeah, that would be really fascinating if, you know, somebody would stand up at the end of the game like, guys, I am so sorry. I am so sorry. I was on my worst behavior for 39 days, but I did it on purpose. It wasn't that wasn't me out here. Because I feel like the jury generally doesn't like an apology. But if you were saying like, well, I actually was playing this character the whole time and the character was kind of an a-hole. I'm not. I'm just an actor.
Like, what if he got up? He was like, Ashley, I am so sorry. Like, I called you a goat and I was laughing in my head when I was doing it because I really liked you, but I just knew that I, right? Like, if he got so.
You should have seen your face. You were so mad and I almost lost it. I almost was cracking up, but I kept. It would be interesting. I mean, just to see somebody try it.
He's so good.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I mean, I do like the idea of sort of like just like dropping the mask at the final tribal council. I feel like, you know, going back to the coach final tribal council where in South Pacific, like he would not like put down this facade of honor, yeah. Integrity, loyalty. I always told the truth. I always did this. You know, it's like you do want to see a break at that final tribal council of, OK, I can tell you guys what was really going on. But
yeah, if Coach had just been like, guys, I haven't even been to church in like 5 years. I'm an atheist. You know, like that would have been it. Everyone like, holy like, oh, shit.
I guess you got me. You got me. It was like, you know, this is how you did the trick. It's interesting. And, you know, it was that same idea with Paul in that Big Brother final two, where that he was asked by a number of people like, Paul, why did you condone this? And, you know, he was just saying like, no, I never did that. That wasn't, you know, that's not what my beliefs are. And people couldn't turn around on him.
I think that's right. I think that often, how often in the final three is the winner, does the winner win because he or she convinces somebody like, I'm not who you thought I was. I'm actually this person. Versus how often does the winner just win because they're like, yeah, everybody already loves me. And like, this is exactly what I did. And you guys still love me. Like, I feel like often the winner is having to like reframe who they are to like, in a way, apologize or like show people who they actually are. Yeah. The only people I can think of who didn't have to do it, people like JT, people or Kim, right? People who like everybody just loved no matter what.
That would be interesting to see if we like went back through all the seasons, like how many times was like, if you would have polled the jury before Final Tribal Council, that it was going to be one person. And then after the final tribal council, it was going to be another person. I think Samoa was like that. I think that the jury was going to give the game to Mick. And then they went to the final tribal council. I think that Natalie convinced them. But I don't think that there's many times where that happens. Do you know, was there any talk of like that potentially that Coach was going to win before that final tribal council with you?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. I don't think it happens. I'd be surprised. I'd say the over under is I think that maybe in the history of Survivor, I think that maybe it's happened 5 times.
That's probably right.
You know, and a lot of times lately, the vote isn't even that close.
Yeah. Well, they're all boozing it up at Ponderosa.
Yeah. All those lush jurors. To go back to Paul from Big Brother, what was it that you saw about Paul that you immediately recognized that he was on this same fateful track as Coach?
Oh, my God. Paul, I feel like, was being so disingenuous and going so much further than he had to go to win the game. So I think it's a combination of one is that he was going really far, right? He was crossing the same kind of lines that Coach was crossing. Coach was crossing like the religious line, but Paul was crossing the like friendship lines, right? He was making everybody feel like he was truly their best friend and out of the game, he would be their best friend. And he was talking a lot of shit about other people behind their back. And so just like Coach, I feel like they both did this thing of going so far beyond what the game called for. So I think the logical argument to be that would be like, well, they did it and like it worked. And like, why, you know, who says you can't use religion? Who says you can't use friendship? Well, my only thing is both of them, I think, were delusional enough that you could tell watching the show that they couldn't even admit to themselves that they were being manipulative because they both wanted to be so loved and so adored and like so followed. And Coach, I think, just like truly couldn't understand the lines between what was real and what was fake with this whole like religion and family thing. And I feel like Paul was almost the same way. He was like trying to have it both ways. He was trying to like be friends with everybody and have all these like followers and like people who adored him. And he wasn't, I don't think he was ever admitting, like he wasn't very often admitting in confessionals, like, haha, I'm like really fucking these people over, right? He was like very defensive about the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that combination at the end just explodes, because all people want is honesty. People want to give $1 million to somebody who they feel like they know. Like you want to at least be like, okay, this is the person I'm giving it to. And I feel like both of those people, it was hard to reconcile like those two sides of them.
Chris Hickey tweeted a question. Hey, Rob, sister, if it's not too late or off topic, could you ask Sophie Clark about her correct prediction that Big Brother 19 Paul was more Coach than Boston Rob? She probably didn't guess she'd be the big meatball in her analogy.
Meatball. That's great. Yeah. Man, I was Googling all those Big Brother contestants today.
Yeah.
They're all still dating. It's nuts.
Is this crazy? Is this the wildest that it's ever been that all of these Big Brother showmances have stayed together?
Yeah, it's like
it's Thanksgiving. That's like the tentpole of the, you sort of look back. It's like, okay, are they still together?
Yeah, it's nuts. They're all having Thanksgiving together. Even Matt and Raven. Damn.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It's all happening.
Crazy.
Did you see something in particular that Josh did that you identified a Sophie-like characteristic in him?
I think that the most Sophie-like characteristic would be all the crying. Mm-hmm. And I think that...
Well, you didn't cry that much.
Not that much. I'm kidding. He was at least semi-aware of his position as like... that he knew that at the end, Paul would be seen as the puppet master. And I think that that's often, you need, if you're up against somebody like Paul, the way Paul loses is the jury just wants somebody to be like, oh no, I knew what was going on the whole time and I like played a role in it. And I think Josh just barely skated by as being able to play that role by doing those goodbye messages. Mm-hmm. Right? Like if you'd seen Paul at the end with Raven or something who was totally delusional, like Paul wasn't going to lose against everybody. I think Josh did just enough to be able to be seen as somebody who like played a role in the game and wasn't a blind follower.
Okay, let me give you another voicemail question. This is from Alice from Montana, the great Alice from Montana.
Hi, Rob and Sophie. This is Alice calling from Montana. So this season has been getting some hate, but on paper, the episodes have been pretty strategically interesting. So my theory is that we've been actually losing the most interesting people all season, and that if some of them were still in the game, it would be a lot more fun. So that being said, now that we're down to 9 out of 18 contestants remaining, would you take a deal to switch out all of the contestants who have been voted out with all of the contestants who are still in?
Okay, so a real Sophie's choice.
Can we run through who we get? We get Simone, Patrick, Allie.
Well, okay, you get Katrina, Simone, Patrick, Alan Ball, don't forget Alan Ball, and then Rourke, Allie, Jessica Cole.
No, I would not take that swap. I think we've lost a couple of key people. Like if I could take three of those people, I would take Alan Ball.
Oh, I'm surprised Alan Ball's your number one draft pick.
He made people drop his pants. I would take Alan. I would take Patrick just for the energy. And I would take Allie.
Okay. Well, all right. So
take all of them.
Allie seems like a well-reasoned choice, but you took two of the real wackos from the season.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the natural response to a pagonging, right? Is you're sitting there watching that being like, won't there be somebody who just does something? Even if that something is stupid, right? You're hoping for like a Cochrane, somebody who's just like gonna make a move for the hell of it. And I feel like Patrick wants to be such good TV. I don't think Patrick would sit back and be the a pagonger.
Yeah.
And Alan, too. I think Alan would spice things up a little. He would make our pot come to a boil a little more quickly.
Yeah. Do you think that Redemption Island is a good case for why there should be Redemption Island in a season, at least in the pre-merge, where it's like you have these people who are out soon, but then we still get to check in with them? Like we get to see Christine Markoski and Stacey Powell talk about Benjamin and Chuckie the Cheese.
Yeah, I mean, people hate Redemption Island, so that's like not a popular opinion, is it?
But I think that they should have it in the preseason, or it's not the preseason, pre-merge.
Oh, in the pre-merge.
I think that it would be fun. Like, I think where you get into problems with it, it's like, oh, now Ozzy is back in the game at Final Five. But I think it's
one
like
challenge away,
right?
Yeah.
Where I think if you had it, especially like you know, the pre-merge is always tough. I feel like get rid of the reward challenge in the pre-merge. And then if we had a Redemption Island, I think it would be exciting. I think that you could have some like, you know, secrets exchanged at the Redemption Island, but then get rid of it by the time we get to the merge.
I'm all for that. I'm all for that. I also think I prefer Redemption Island to a bunch of like random twists. And so if they're looking to inject things into the early season to make it more exciting or like to make sure they have good characters, I would prefer Redemption Island to a bunch of random shit.
I mean, could you imagine where Patrick Bolton and Alan Ball, your two faves, could be bunking together at Redemption Island, hanging out, talking about what they're going to do.
I also think Redemption Island has like brought us so many good plot lines. Like, I just remember like Matt Elrod on Redemption Island with like his Bible and everything. I feel like it ties the season together because like you have all this happening, but you have Christine in the background, like killing it at Redemption Island. You have this like other...
Ozzy is gonna vote himself out of the game to go try to knock Christine Markoski out. Kat doesn't think she's dateable because she didn't make the merge.
Everybody burning their buffs and like saying what do they say to what's his face?
They say
Brad Culpepper. Fuck you, Brad Culpepper.
Yeah, there were some moments. There were some moments. It gets a bad reputation.
And this is like George Bush presidency. It's like we're all now, you know.
Like, remember that Redemption Island? Remember how good it was?
Remember the Iraq War? Sorry.
So, Brian O'Connell wants to know, Sophie, what's your favorite podcast nowadays besides RHAP? I guess during Big Brother season. And what do you think about Serial Season 2 and Bo Bergdahl?
Serial Season 2 is a bust. It was a bust.
They never even, is there going to be Serial Season 3 or the brand is...
No, I think canceled. It's off the air.
Yeah.
The brand is ruined. I'm glad Bill Bergdahl got off or whatever. But what was the first part of the question?
What are your favorite podcasts now? Remember we used to do check-ins and you would tell me about podcasts that you're listening to?
Well, I hope you're listening to The Daily, which is really good.
Which one?
Like The New York Times podcast.
New York Times Daily.
My favorite podcast, which I think not enough people listen to, is Reply All, which is a podcast about the internet.
Yes. Yeah.
And I felt like to this day, Rob, they should interview you as like, I feel like you are like a internet guru in a way. You've like created the community on the internet.
Yeah, that is one of, it's the guy, Gimlet, right? That's one of their podcasts. Yeah, I've actually never listened to that. I used to listen to Startup when it first came on. Listen to that.
And Rob, I have a podcast idea to pitch to you.
Oh, good. What is it?
Okay, so I was home for Thanksgiving and somehow over the dinner table, my dad started talking about the loved ones trip of Survivor. And he still has like all of these crazy stories from what it was like. His loved one trip also was a week long because there was some kind of volcano and there was only flights once a week. So he has all these nutty stories about being with Sean Hance in Fiji when Sean Hance was hitting on all the 19-year-old Australian girls. Anyway, but he is like, he could go on for hours about this. And I feel like you should have a podcast series with loved ones from each loved one trips, like recapping from the loved one's perspective. Because there is so much more drama there than you would expect.
I know. I agree with you. It would be amazing and it would be very interesting to listen to. I just don't know, you know, how much, you know, confidentiality there is on these trips. Mm-hmm. They're all highly emotional and it's stuff that didn't happen. These aren't necessarily people that were on a TV show. Their loved ones were on a TV show. And there's a lot of alcohol involved with some of these stories. So I think it might be a little bit below board in terms of like what
the
were
untold stories,
the untold stories.
Man, that's just bad.
But I think you're on to something.
Right.
Yeah. I know my mom has some okay, probably not as good as the South Pacific stories, but she had some okay stories in terms
South
of...
South Pacific was crazy.
Yeah.
Whitney's husband was on the trip.
Right, well, because there's also like the thing where one of the loved ones gets voted out, basically.
Yeah, when they don't get to go on the show.
Right.
The night before, three of the loved ones in South Pacific were told, sorry, your people were voted out like 5 days ago.
Yeah. And they don't get to see their loved one. They just have to go home.
Well, anyway.
Yeah.
That wasn't the case on my season completely, but yeah.
Yeah. You know, and especially there's a whole like postscript with the Whitney story. It's just like,
I feel like we're teasing your listeners and now they're all going to be like clamoring for this.
Here's the thing. When Survivor goes off the air, we'll do these inside baseball podcasts.
How many years of content do you think you'll be able to do as Survivor goes off the air?
I don't know. I think I have one good year.
One good year. One recap.
I think I have one good year. So, you know what? I listen to another podcast. I listen to Up First.
Ooh, what's that?
Listen to that.
Is that a baseball podcast?
No. It's like the NPR, like 15 minutes of like, here's what's going on today.
Oh, that's like the daily. That's like the New York Times daily.
That's good. Yeah. I like that. Gets me started.
I do mine on 1.5 now, speed.
1.5, yeah. I do mostly 1.25 and then 1.5. Jason wants to know, what's your favorite restaurant in New York City?
Whoa.
Do you still live in the city or have you moved out of the metropolitan area?
I live in Brooklyn.
Okay.
But I work during the week, so I'm gone Monday through Thursday. I don't know if Jason lives in New York, but Yemeni Cafe in Brooklyn Heights is really good.
What's it called? Mini Cafe?
Yemeni cafe.
Like it's
Yemeni
a tiny food. Cafe?
It's like Yemeni food.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a tiny Yemeni cafe.
What kind of food is Yemeni food?
It's like Middle Eastern. Okay. A lot of good, like, you know, hummus, stuff like that.
Hummus.
Yeah, hummus.
Okay. Any other picks?
I mean, I could keep going, but I don't know how interesting this is. But Jason can DM me. Slide into my DMs.
Get some recommendations. Okay. This is from Thomas, who wants to know, I'd love to hear Sophie talk about how she thinks her archetype or players like her can best navigate the game. Obviously, each season is a different animal, but I wonder if she has any tips or rules for future players or for herself if she would play again. Well, let's leave it to players who you see as a Sophie archetype.
Well, I feel like all the Sophie, quote unquote, Sophie archetypes have done really poorly ever since me.
Who are the Sophie archetypes?
Well, people I know who were supposed to be the Sophie archetypes were like, what was her name? Liz Markham, and then Rourke this season.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like the Sophie archetypes don't do a good enough job of like blending in. Like I would say that's generally been both. That was like Liz and Rourke's problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so like either they were not the Sophie archetypes or maybe I like caused them to get like a little more heat than they should have gotten.
Yeah.
My biggest advice is I feel like Devin is like playing such a beautiful game. Is that like everybody should go out there and like look at players like Devin and Kim and Boston Rob on his like third Redemption Island season. Not so much Boston Rob. I think Kim and Devin are much better examples. And like just like read How to Win Friends and Influence People and like not be a jerk and listen to people. Like very, very basic things.
Yeah. So you think that the key to the game is just being sort of like this blank canvas that the other players can make you into whatever they want to make you into?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I feel like everybody needs to identify what is it about them that makes them vulnerable and makes them not threatening to somebody else and amplify it. And I think some people in this season are doing this really well. Like Devin is doing it as well. In a lot of ways, like Joe is doing it, right? Joe has realized that like what makes me not threatening is that I'm annoying. So I'm going to be super annoying and people are going to be not threatened by me. Mm-hmm. Like JP probably is doing this. Other people I think are doing this less well. Like you can see them.
This is a great question. Well, why are we heaping all this praise on to Devin? And then here's JP who literally says nothing. He says nothing or he says like, you know, things like that. And people are like, JP is stupid. What an idiot. Why'd they cast him on the show? But Devin is here. Like, oh, my God. Oh, let me fall over myself. Oh, Devin, what a genius Survivor player.
Well, because I think it's not just about listening and like being quiet. It's about drawing people out and getting people to talk and give you information.
So like, Devin's more engaged.
Yeah, he's more engaged. And he engages. He like gets to an outcome passively, whereas JP doesn't get to an outcome, as far as we can see. And like Ryan, I thought was doing this well. Like in the first episode, the way that Ryan got Devin as his partner, I was like, oh, Ryan is totally taking like the Cochrane approach of like, I'm this quirky little nerdy guy. Like, don't you want to like be in charge of me? Like, I'll do whatever you say. And like, you're the like young hot stud. And like, we're going to like to me, that's exactly what somebody like Ryan should be doing. But he seems to really be putting his foot in it. Whereas now when you see his conversations with Devin and with Ben, he takes like a much more like masculine, assertive posture during those conversations. And like, instead of going to Devin and being like, oh my God, Devin, I can't believe it. I'm so excited. Like, I got the idol. What do you think we should do? Like, you gotta give me advice. I don't know how to play it. I'm so stressed out. Instead, he was like, yo, bro. And he gave him this like hard stare. And I think they even fist bumped, like almost like a, I got you. Like, I'm in charge of you. And I feel like that was a total misstep if I am. Like, he needs to realize that like what makes him vulnerable and not a target is like being the beta in that relationship. And he was like trying to use the idol like to become an alpha.
Too much of an alpha.
Yeah.
Did it bother you how much Ryan kept saying in my pants in this episode?
Yes. Also because they were shorts and they were very, very small. So I doubted they were in there.
Justin Feinberg wants to know which player this season is most likely to unironically love Jack and Jill? And why is it Cole?
Ooh. Yeah, Cole's a good choice.
I think JP might be a sleeper here.
I could see JP being an Adam Sandler fan. Cole and JP. I definitely see it in the guys this season. Mm-hmm. Being Adam Sandler fans. I could see Joe as being just like a diehard. I could see him knowing every single line to like Happy Gilmore or whatever. Right? Like quoting it.
Yeah. Well, the old stuff, I think that there's a reverence there, Sophie.
Yeah.
I think that's like the Adam Sandler stuff that's like post, 2004, somewhere around there. I think maybe what, post Big Daddy? I think mm-hmm. That's like the cutoff. Justin Karp wants to know, if you had the power to decide who wins the season, who would you choose and why? Did you give us a winner pick also?
I don't think I ever gave you a winner pick. If I had the power to choose who wins this season, I would probably go with Devin.
Devin. You're I'd on board.
Or Lauren. I'd like to see Lauren. Switching.
Okay.
Can we undo the bell? Can we unbell?
You can unding.
I'm undigging. I'm going to go with Lauren because I'd be totally happy if Devin wins. But like Lauren, I feel like is this sleeper in my mind. And I think if she wins, it would mean that she would like pull some crazy move. And I would just like to see that happen.
With the extra vote.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Will she play it correctly or will she misuse it like Steven?
I think she'll misuse it like Steven.
Okay.
I don't want Steven to be alone in that. Every time I watch
that, He's not alone in that.
An avocado.
Why, have you gone back and rewatched Steven's season?
No, but that moment is ingrained into my brain.
You remember it well.
Yeah.
Okay. Sophie, I'm looking at your Twitter. I'm looking at your Halloween costume. You had a Survivor-inspired Halloween costume this year?
Yeah, how great was that? I did not get enough credit for that.
Yeah, were you going
that to a... That made me want to quit Twitter. Because if I don't get praise, what's the point of being on Twitter?
Yeah. I saw there was a praise for you on Reddit. Were you going to a Survivor Halloween party?
Yeah, I don't even like Halloween that much, but I go to Eliza's party every year.
Yes.
And so it wasn't Survivor themed at all, but I knew Eliza would be there. And I'm like, well, if I don't care what I dress as, I might as well dress as something that people will appreciate.
Yes.
And Eliza was there and Andrea was there and Brian was there. But nobody got it. It was really
nobody
a bummer.
Got it. So
I thought it was so obvious.
Okay, and you were Sandra Diaz Twine. So you were basically Sandra D from like the third act of Grease. And then you were wrapped up in twine.
Exactly. I was Sandra D as Twine.
Sandra D as Twine. See, I wouldn't have got the as.
Yeah. I'm going as Sandra D going as Twine for Halloween.
Okay.
I'm Sandra D as Twine. You know, Sandra liked it. That's all that really matters.
Sandra liked it. Now, a lot of people said that you were just being patronizing for the all winner season of Survivor. Is that true?
Yes, definitely.
That you were just trying to get in Sandra's good graces?
100%. You have to bow to the queen.
To make up for the, you guys once have bad blood, but now it's water under the bridge?
You know what? Apparently we did. I had some kind of total gaffe that it was a joke, and I think she misunderstood it.
Nah, but so, Sophie, I get it, because I think that Sandra is mad at me now.
I think she's a literal person.
Yeah, because that's what happened to me, because she got upset with me, because she said that I asked in an interview, is Sandra a game changer? But just because I asked the question doesn't mean that you know what my answer is to the question.
Yeah.
And she said, I asked Johnny Fairplay. She had heard I asked Johnny Fairplay, is Sandra a game changer? And he said that she wasn't. And I believe that I believe my answer was like, how could you say she's not a game changer? But she only cared that I asked, that I even posited the question.
You know, Rob, I'm going to do you a favor. I'm going to send you my costume.
Okay.
Next Halloween.
Okay. So you're going to send me Sandra Diaz Twine?
Yeah.
And what do you want me to do? Have a contest?
No. You just got to dress up.
I'll wear
sandals. Yes. You got to dress up. You got to post the picture. The whole thing. Water under the bridge.
Yeah.
It works like clockwork.
And then when I saw her for the Game Changers interview, she was like very cold to me. I said, "Why? I don't understand why you're mad at me." She's like, "Because you said it's Sandra Game." I said, "No, but I didn't." She didn't want to hear it. It was no coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I can see that. Hey, Rob, why don't you ever go out to the location? You should go to location.
I should? I don't know. It doesn't really, it's not something I'm dying to do. Why you would? Is that something that you would be interested in?
Yeah, I would be interested in that. I feel like you would do good interviews.
Oh, well, thank you very much. But you would be interested in me going out there? You'd be interested in seeing like the everything on location?
No, I'm interested in you going out there and interviewing people. Oh,
I appreciate it. I mean, I think everybody that's out there does such a good job. They don't need me fouling up the works.
Yeah, you're right. Okay.
Being stupid. What is this you said? It was looking for something ancient in my email. I came across emails from my college library saying I had to return The Prince, Lord of the Flies, Survivor Lessons, Essays on Communication and Reality TV, and Staging the Real, Factual TV Programming in the Age of Big Brother. So you took out a bunch of library books about going on Survivor?
Yeah, I was looking for a receipt from my college library about a computer that got stolen recently. Anyway, and I totally forgot about this, but like I had rented or taken out from the library all these books, like some of the classic ones that I think a lot of people read, but some of them, I remember I read a book that was all about like all the ways that Mark Burnett had fixed the first season of the show and like the lawsuit that had come out of it. Mm-hmm. I was impressed with myself. I was going through my email realizing like how much preparation I'd done.
How much prep you did. Now all those books have been burned since then.
Exactly.
That's right. All right, Sophie, what else? What else is going on? You're listening to podcasts. Your love life is good.
Everything's good.
Everything is good. Yeah. Work is good.
Work is good. I'm in Colorado all the time. I think I'm going to see Jim Rice. That's going to be exciting. I haven't seen Jim Rice since my season.
Is there bad blood between you and Jim Rice?
I don't think so.
Okay. Did Jim Rice try the Joe strategy before he got voted out?
Oh, no. But I feel like Jim Rice should have thought of the Joe strategy. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure he could have executed as well as Joe.
Why? That he couldn't have been that big of an a-hole?
No, I just think that like anything he did wouldn't have helped. But I mean, I would love to see Jim again. I don't know if you feel the same way, but like
I do.
Jim is like, if you said told me I could see 10 people play Survivor again, like I would choose Jim. I truly believe that Jim is like a super creative Survivor player who would bring something awesome. And so I feel like Jim is probably disappointed that he did not get to be the one who came up with that first.
Right. Now, you don't think that it would be similar to his massive flame out that he had in the campaign to get voted back into Survivor?
You know what, Rob? At least he campaigned. At least he tried. I feel like he was probably super close. Somebody stole his spot.
What happened with that? Did somebody like post his DMs or what? Or he just started talking like he started trash talking people?
This is why you want to see him back on, right? Like he was totally trash talking.
Right. So he basically did the Joe Menace strategy in trying to get voted on to Survivor. I'm going to be the most hated person out there. He said, I'd rather be the first one voted off than not make the show.
Exactly.
Okay.
Poor Jim. Well,
give my best to Jim Rice. I love Jim Rice. Well, Sophie, this was so great to catch up with you. If you happen to be listening to any other podcasts that you want to tell us to check out, it's a long, cold Survivor off season. We'd love to check in with you. If you have any Netflix, any podcasts you're listening to, people always appreciate your recommendations.
Man. Okay. Now I'm a little stressed out by it. I'll think of something. I just read a couple good books, but that was about it.
Yeah. We don't know that our listeners don't care about books, Sophie. Audiobooks?
Why don't you have a book club? We should have a book club.
A book club?
Wouldn't that be fun?
Can I listen to the audiobook?
Yes.
Okay. I'll procrastinate reading the book.
During the book club, you can't say, I heard him say, or when I was listening.
I read.
To say, like, in chapter 3, I read.
Okay. I would legitimately do this, Sophie.
Okay.
Okay?
You should think of a good book.
Well, you think of the book.
I'll think of a book.
It's your book club.
Okay. We can read one of the books that I read before Survivor.
Can we read the reality TV in the Big Brother world?
Yeah, exactly. There we go. Everybody read it. First lesson will be next week.
Yeah, I want to read Survivor Lessons, Essays on Communication and Reality Television.
Great. Okay. Sounds good. I'll send you homework.
Okay. All right. Well, and people on Twitter, even though Sophie has a private Twitter, remind her that she said she was going to do this. Okay.
Yeah, you can remind me. I'll do it.
Okay.
We'll have a tweeting book cup.
Okay. Stay on Sophie for this. All right. For the people that that can follow Sophie Clark on Twitter, Sophie at Sophie G Clark. What else? Anything you want to plug?
I like the likes on Instagram.
Likes on Instagram. Boy, what are you posting on Instagram?
Just pictures. What I would most like to plug is if you ever see me or decide to stalk me, to say hello and be like, "Oh my God, are you the girl from Survivor?"
Because see, I feel like that you don't like that.
Yeah, but you know, I don't like it that much. But I don't like it when I'm with other people. Like, I was with Cochran in Disney World one time, and literally like 20 people came up to us and was like, "Oh my God, it's Cochran from Survivor. Will you take a picture of me with him?"
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, well that's like a little rude.
Yeah.
So actually, don't come up to me. But like, if I'm ever with Cochran, if you could come up to me and be like, "Oh my God, it's Sophie from Survivor," and then give Cochran the camera, that would be highly appreciated.
Why does Cochran always go to Disney World? Disneyland.
He loves Disneyland. It's magical.
I mean,
I've never been before. I went with Cochran. I can understand it though.
Yes. He's never said to me, "Rob, would you like to go to Disneyland with me?" What do I have to do to get the Disneyland invite from Cochran?
Oh, that's embarrassing. I think you just got to ask him. I think a little bit is like it's not even a cool, ironic thing. I think he just genuinely loves Disneyland.
Him and Steven, you know? I feel like, are there. They're probably there right now.
Probably are.
Yeah. All right. Well, Sophie, always great to catch up with you. Looking for, don't let it be a year and a half until we do this again.
Yeah, I won't. We could do it again during Big Brother Celebrity.
Oh yeah, Celebrity Big Brother. You're on board for that? You and your boyfriend are ready to listen to RHAP? Daily updates with Taryn?
Yeah. Okay. I heard Black China's going to be on it.
Black China? Whoa. Anthony Scaramucci, I feel like that there was talk that he was going to be on it. Yeah, this could be a real, very exciting.
Yeah, I think very exciting. I'm ready for it.
Okay. All right. We'll see, Sophie. Thank you so much, Sophie. Always appreciate it.
Thank you, Rob. Goodbye.
All right, everybody. There you have it. Sophie Clark back here on the podcast. Very fun to catch up with Sophie. Hope you guys enjoyed that one as much as I did. Next on the podcast, we're going to get into everything in the Wiggle Room with Josh Wiggler. That's going to be up for you guys Monday night into Tuesday morning. We'll see what's going on with what Josh thinks about the season after the last episode, how his Thanksgiving was, and check in on the wand off before we get back into a double episode of Survivor coming up on Wednesday night. So look for the know-it-alls at 10:15 p.m. Eastern time as we start to move in to just 1 week till the big show in Austin, Texas. Again, for ticket information, robhaswebsite.com/AustinKIA. And patrons, don't forget to check out that $10 discount for those tickets for Austin, Texas. All right. Have a good one, everybody. Take care. Bye.